Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It normally airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with a community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Manny, with...
Me, Fernando.
And Sierra.
We are all UKI High students.
Today our topic is media literacy. Here we are, youth speaking on public radio, being part of the media. We are happy to do this, and now that many listeners look forward to our shows. And because this is non-commercial radio, we will not take a break every 15 minutes to deliver you to an advertiser. We are able to do this because listeners like you support this broadcast by becoming members of KZYX. So please consider becoming a member if you have not already done so. You can join on the website kzyx.org or by calling 895-2324 during normal business hours. Like we said, today our topic is media literacy. Youth Speaks House has covered this subject four times in the past, beginning in 2003, for centuries. Literacy has referred to the ability to read and write. Today we get most of our information through an interwoven system of media technologies. The ability to read many types of media has become an essential skill in the 21st century.
Media literacy is the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, and create media. Media literate youth and adults are better able to understand the complex messages we receive from television, radio, internet, newspapers, magazines, books, billboards, video games, music, and all other forms of media. Media literacy could be defined as the ability to interpret and create personal meaning from the hundreds of verbal and visual symbols we take in each day, through all the aforementioned media sources and especially advertising. It is the ability to choose and select, the ability to challenge and question, the ability to be conscious about what's going on around you and not be passive or vulnerable. To become media literate is not to memorize facts or statistics about the media, but rather to raise the right questions about what you are reading, watching, or listening to.
The sources of media are rapidly changing. We have grown up with computers and the internet becoming the primary source for much of what radio, television, and newspaper used to deliver. Tablets, smartphones, and laptop computers have made it possible to always have the newest media wherever you are. At UKI High School, we are given computers to use in the classroom and to take home. Our homework and tests are completed using these Chromebooks and high-speed internet. Many college courses at Mendocino College are delivered through the internet. This is very different from 2003, when few schools, let alone homes, had access to fast internet connections. And the evolution of the smartphone and cellular towers has made web service available in most areas of our rural county. Though compared to urban areas, we are seriously behind the times of broadband delivery.
While this tech-o magic has led us to a much larger quantity of media wherever we are, it has not always improved the quality or intent of what is delivered. The term fake news has been in the press a lot recently. Even the president has accused one of the largest media sources on the planet, CNN, of being fake news. And during the last presidential campaign, many false stories were released to the public that may have influenced the election. Many point the finger at social media like Facebook as being the vehicle for deceptive stories, usually referred to as propaganda. As a recent study from Stanford University shows, students at all education levels have trouble identifying sources and judging the credibility of the information they find online. Students had trouble differentiating between news reporting and sponsored content on websites. They did not consistently check the source of content shared via social media and had trouble evaluating information retrieved in Google search results.
In other words, our future voters, jury members, and taxpayers lack the basic ability to determine truth from lies, just as we are entering a new era of dangerous propaganda from both government and private sources. Fake news is both politically useful and increasingly profitable. Radio has been declining in use over the last few decades. Clearly, in rural areas like Mendocino County, radio is still very popular. Young people here in Mendocino County do listen to some radio, especially if their parents do, but not as much as our parents did when they were our age. Many youth do not own radios, and podcasts and downloading are our main sources for getting music and audio programming. Media has become a two-way street, and today's hosts are involved in producing and uploading podcasts.
In English classes, we are still reading books, an early form of media. Some books are assigned, and some we get to choose from a list. Most of these books are over 20 to 100 years old. We know that we are assigned certain books to train us to analyze literature, but some seem less relevant today. Is it possible that the advent of the electronic book will alter the media that we know we now call literature? We will begin the show by talking about how youth influences the media and how the media influences youth. We will discuss our relationships with the web, television, radio, books, and magazines. Then we will speak a bit about what we have learned about media literacy. Media literacy could be defined as the ability to interpret the message each form of media is presenting us. Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message, meaning that the information is altered by the form of the media that delivers it. This was a popular concept in the 1960s. We would like to hear how you think it applies to today's new forms of media, specifically the internet, cell phones, and texting.
When we open the phone line in 40 minutes or so, we would like to hear from you about your relationship with the media, living in a rural, relatively remote area. How does media influence your life? If you have children, do you make a conscious effort to inform them of the ways in which the media attempts to manipulate them? How can you determine if a news story is fake or real? All right, Manny, what types of media do you use in your daily life?
Some types of media that I would use, I would say music is one that I usually try to, or that I use that can be a source, or maybe not always the best, but like Twitter, maybe Facebook, but it's sometimes hard to know what is, who is telling the truth and who is not. So really that's what, this is what we're getting into, you know, trying to figure out how to access the information, analyze it, and then evaluate.
I mean, I get that. I mean, I guess I would use I use Twitter and Facebook the same way, but I wouldn't use it in the sense that that's how I get my information. That's where I get my topics, like what I want to look up later. You know, like I have it in the back of my head for the rest of the day. Like, oh, I can ask somebody else. Or I get to school or I'm at school and I see this kind of information. So I can kind of just ask people, see if it's true or what do they think, you know?
Yeah, with me, I usually just use Facebook and music mainly. And sometimes, like, if there's certain news that I didn't hear about, I'll hear it from friends or people talking about, like, hey, did you hear this happened? And what do you think? Stuff like that. But, yeah, it's usually my main line of media.
No, I definitely use music, too, actually, not thinking of that. I'm, like, usually always on Spotify or YouTube or SoundCloud, whatever. And there's always ads on that, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad, actually, you went there because, like, you know, that's also a... That's also a way of media, you know, like Twitter, say if a new artist comes out with a new song and they tweet about it, yeah. You know, that's its type of, that's a way of getting it across, you know?
Yeah, their type of way of advertising it. Yeah, there's a lot of like news shows, especially like CNN and that and Fox News, where they have a lot of the advertisements like that. And especially, I feel like in advertising that and getting your news across like that, I feel like that's like a lot of the main way people get a lot of information nowadays is a lot of advertisement and deliver news like from popular newscasts like CNN and Fox and stuff like that. So,
and they're so trusted a lot of the time too. Like a lot of people don't, it's like just because they're so set up and they're a big kind of, what are they, a corporation, yeah, I guess, like they're not really willing to go against that, like, oh, a big news source said it. So it must be true, you know? It's, like, hard to debate against that.
Yeah, especially because a lot of people, they say their perspective on things, and, like, especially, like, Fox and CNN, they have certain audiences, so, like, they filter their news, and they deliver their news in a way that makes it so the audience gets what they want to hear. But if, like, that news goes in a direction where they go the complete opposite, then it's like everybody goes on a rampage and says, oh, this is fake. That's not possible. That can't be right. So it's like, I feel like people in the news, they, like, filter a lot of the news, so it's like you never get the real, like, an overall perspective, or you don't get one that everybody can agree on, because you're always going to have certain people who disagree on certain news.
Yeah, that's, like, the thing with internet, you know, so many people are on it constantly. There's always something new going on, and that's what makes it so easy for people to believe things or, you know, just find something that catches them. And that's what really is crazy, how fast and how easy we could do it. And there's so many different ways you can advertise, or not even advertise, just put whatever your product is, your ideas out there really easily, you know?
And I mean, you know, like if they have advertisements, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the things that we see. We're talking about the news that we hear. And because although the way that we're getting our information has changed, the fact that we're getting information still hasn't changed. Like when newspapers were a main source of, you know, getting our news, we would get a daily newspaper with a few articles, and then the Sunday paper would come. And that's where you have like the bigger paper with more articles. And so, because when newspapers and all that was way more popular compared to now, was during like the 1950s, and people a lot of the times wouldn't work on Sundays, so they'd be home on Sundays reading the paper, and on Monday they would go back to work, and they'd be talking about the articles that they read on a Sunday, because those are the like most important, or there's just a lot more to talk about. So they're still talking about the news today, like they did back in the 1950s. That's all they're talking about, you know. What they hear is what they're talking about.
Well, yeah, and with like how back then where it was like newspapers and that was like the main, kind of like the main way of getting your news. Like back then you can actually sit, kind of analyze the news and kind of read through it quickly, where we have our internet and we have abilities to share more often and share the news that we have. So it's like when we share it, more people are like, oh, there's this story, and they read through it really quickly, and then they see another story and they read through it. So people nowadays, it's like they're not so much on based on finding stories and like really analyzing and seeing what's in the stories. Nowadays they're just like trying to go through as many stories as they can, learning as much news as they can, whether it may be fake or whether it may not, or depending on what perspective it's from.
So we got our teacher, Mr. Lefebvre, here with us too. Mm-hmm. I just have a question. So you're an English teacher, right? You know, sometimes do you feel like sometimes you have to be careful on what you say or how you say it? Especially in front of students, because, you know, you might give out someone might get a wrong interpretation of what you're trying to say.
Considering the politically trepidatious times we're living in, it is sometimes a scary proposal to go down a line of determining what's truth or not truth regarding news in front of kiddos. I don't want to call anyone's trusted news source a fake news source. Families usually gather around and watch or listen to the same news source. To lambaste a news source in front of a room as false, there could be a student in that room whose entire family spends time watching that news source. And I want to give that student a sense of skepticism, a willingness to question this news source that this family is watching, but I also don't want to devalue that family and that family's choices. So it's a really fine line that I have to walk. Really, it's just encouraging a skeptical eyebrow towards all sources of media, regardless of agree or disagree with them. Cool question, Manny. That was nice.
Yeah, basically, just to throw this question out there, I'm thinking, like, how do you guys think, like, the media has kind of influenced youth back when, like, newspapers and that was a big thing compared to now where we have, like, certain news feeds and a lot more internet access?
Yeah, with such easy access and so quick, such quick phones and stuff, the youth do, especially the youth. I mean, everybody gets influenced, but, like, you're saying, the youth, they're on it more. You know, because they're not as busy or whatever throughout the day, they see a lot more things, and it could influence them in bad ways or good ways, you know, because it depends on what they're watching or, you know, being showed or what they show to each other. But same thing with, you know, music. That could be a bad way of learning things, but it could also be a good type of way to learn. Because, I mean, I've actually learned a lot from hearing just little pieces from songs and saying, I wonder what he's talking about, you know, and then that's where you go and do your own research.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how we're using it.
Yeah, well, what do you think, Fernando?
I don't know. Question? I like what you brought up with the music, you know, how we have to find our own interpretation of it, just similar to, like, our media literacy, where we're trying to analyze news, see if it's right or wrong. Or with music, we're trying to analyze the meaning behind it, you know, and actually, even if it's not the writer's intention, you know, the artist, it's kind of, we have our own intention to interpret it. Like, there's our interpretation, and there's the author's interpretation, both in media and in music, you know.
Yeah, and that's the same with, like, certain types of media, like, like the songs than books and then art, or even sometimes art in a way. Like the author or the creators, and they can like portray something in their certain way, and then you kind of listen to it and it gives you a chance to like analyze what they're saying, because in like songs they can, their lyrics when they some songs when they speak of a certain thing or what they're trying to portray, it's like not very, their idea is not very specific, so it's like you kind of get the way of like, oh well, what do you think like they're actually really trying to portray, and you kind of get your chance to like form your own opinion about it. And it's like the same with all media.
You guys are discussing a lot of this idea of analyzing music. I want to take that idea and apply it to the media and bias, analyzing for bias. First off, what is your guys' idea of bias, and how do you determine if someone is coming at you from a biased perspective or standpoint? Where do you guys start in that idea?
I'll go ahead. I just kind of start on the tone of voice, definitely how they're trying to talk to me. Like if they're welcoming, like, you know, or they're trying to influence you, because you can tell when someone's trying to get you to buy something, someone's trying to get you to think something, like, oh, obviously you're trying to get me to think that, you know?
Almost instinctual.
Yeah, it's kind of instinct. Yeah, you have to listen, pick up the way that they're talking, the language. There's just like subtle words that kind of stand out. And that's where you have to like just start focusing a lot more, which I feel that we're not doing. Since we have such fast access to everything else, we're kind of losing touch on slowing down and focusing on language, because we used to have to read newspapers, and now we're kind of just scrolling through text, and it's not, because we're getting it so fast. There's so much information being put out. We want to read more, but we can't because we're just scrolling past everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like more now, especially with that, with getting a lot more news game put out there more quick, a lot of people are just scrolling through it. They're not really trying to, they're not really looking for that bias, and they're not really looking for whether somebody's trying to convince them or even whether it's fake. It's like more people are just based on just scrolling down, looking at as much news, and like when people, you can tell when somebody's trying to be biased, but now it's like nowadays, people aren't really looking for that. So now people, I feel like people are kind of like losing like the way to think when on their own, and like they're kind of losing like what information that really sound like when they're trying to be biased.
I'd say that, you know, one thing to think about is with Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, that a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? Yeah. And you can take in that picture and actually analyze it later after you've seen it. Whereas text, you actually have to kind of put some effort into it. Mm. And I think that's one of the more dangerous things, because you can create so much interpretation and bias by the photograph you choose. And it's such a visual. Would you guys talk a little bit about what Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat are?
Like Facebook, it's like they're all different forms of like your way of putting out your news, but like each of them, like Facebook, is more like kind of, they each have their own way of sharing your own stories and like sharing your own kind of news in a way, and like what you've been doing and stuff like that, and kind of get putting out there for like your friends or certain people to see.
Yeah, a lot of those apps are like you know, it's like social media. It's you're putting your, you're showing the world your life or what you're doing, you know, in the current moment. But, you know, that's where it also mixes with the news, because people are constantly posting things or, you know, just anything that interests the individual, they're putting on to their profile. So I think that's where, you know, we can go back to, like, the bias thing. A lot of people, you know, it's opinions. It's not really, you know, that's where it can kind of mix and mess with people's heads, because, you know.
Yeah, because I've been part of those kind of posts where, like, I post something and say, hey, look at this, like, and I'll say, like, just a small thing, like, I do agree with it or that. And I know some people who are like that, where they'll see, like, a very, like, an article in that, and they'll be really opinionative on their part, especially when they're sharing it with friends. They'll be like, oh, look at this. And they'll really say, like, their opinion on it. And sometimes when they're saying it, it's like they kind of want you to be on their side or see it from their perspective before they actually go in and read it.
I mean, yeah, social media has a lot of that. Social media has a lot of opinions most of the time, you know? Like, it's just people saying, oh, I feel like this, I feel like that, because it's, like, their daily lives. But I feel like Facebook is more post-driven, where they have to like write it out. They have to type something out. And Instagram is more picture-driven, where you're seeing a visual. I mean, they both post pictures, but you know, like one's definitely more where you write something out, kind of almost like a blog, and then Instagram's pictures, and then Twitter's a little mixture of both, you know. But
yeah, and same thing with Snapchat. In a way, it's like they have, it's mostly picture, but it's like it has that little bit of writing, and it's kind of like with the four main social media branches, like Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and Facebook. It's like Facebook starts out as like that one where it's could be image, but it's like a lot of it's based like mostly on words and that and what people are saying, and then like Instagram is just pictures. So it's like in Snapchat and Twitter, like the in between where you can do both. So it's like each form of the media is like a different kind of leaning each way, kind of like a different way of portraying it, whether it be image or words.
YouTube too.
Yeah.
I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on these social media avenues and their role in blocking or stopping the dissemination of fake news. Should they actively do so? Should they respect the First Amendment and allow all articles and words out there? Where are you at on that?
Well, yeah, that's like the thing. A lot of people, when you say, like when you're trying to limit it and you're trying to say, well, this is fake news, and you start to take it off, or you kind of like you could also block it like on Facebook can and that, but I feel like people do that, and people are just saying, like, when people say it's fake, they're like, oh, you're just, we have the freedom of speech, we can say what we want, and it's just, it's like, that's your opinion whether it's fake news and that. So people, like, if you, it's like a kind of bad thing either way, because when you post something it can't be bad, but when you people try to take it off knowing it's like fake news or it's not liable, people then get all defensive and say, well, it's just my point of view. And I have the right to express my opinion, whether it be truth or not.
Yeah, I think people have, like, you know, they have the right to say whatever they want. But just because they have that right doesn't mean they should do that, because why would we want to spread fake news, you know, or maybe cause anxieties or some sort of worries to other people that might believe these stories. But here's where the good part comes in, I guess. You know, with internet, there are websites or just different things that you can go to and help you determine whether the news is real or not. So that's where, like I was saying earlier, it depends on how you're using it, you know. But it's just curiosity, you know. You can type in something totally random and you can find the answer to a lot of things on the internet.
I don't know, but with the internet, I feel like there's a lot of chance for separation. Like there's, like you said, Anna Sierra brought up blocking something, like, oh, you don't want to see it, you can block it, you know. So the more that we block, the more we're kind of isolated and set apart from everybody else. We all kind of get in our own little bubble, and everyone has their own little bubble, and if social media tries to pop all these bubbles, now there's just gonna end up being one bubble where no one's happy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, where can social media decide what's right and what's wrong, you know? Like other than facts, there's also opinions. Like, how can opinions be wrong if they're just
right? I think we could also, like, all agree in the room here, you know, internet is good. A lot of these things that maybe over-advertised or whatever are good for us and maybe helpful or, you know, some sort of help to us. But it's just so much of these things that are being pushed towards us. It's just kind of hard to really know what's going on in a way. But like I said, you know, internet is helpful because sometimes you just need a quick answer or something, and it could be helpful. So, you know, we're not here saying that this is bad things, but we're just trying to share the ideas and try to find. We're not being biased. We're looking at both sides, I guess.
Yeah, that's the big thing with internet. Internet is a good thing overall. I mean, it helps us. We have it in school. We have it in work. We have it in our daily lives. But whether it is like how Manny said, gain like a quick answer to something, or whether it be like sharing pictures or whatever, it's like internet's a good thing, but you have to look at the fact that a lot of it is for media, and the way that the media and the news and that is portrayed in it, you have to be careful because a lot of it is biased or fake or opinionated, so you have to like really focus on that.
Well, it's personalized too. Matt, why don't you talk about that a little bit, about how personalized your Facebook feed becomes by the choices you make. So it ends up being kind of like your Facebook.
Well, I'll just start with an anecdote that I just described to the kiddos here. I was on Amazon earlier with my wife, trying to buy baggage for our flight we're taking next week to Florida. I'm on my Facebook feed just moments ago, and what advertisement did I see pop up? That same exact bag that I was looking for with my wife just this morning. The internet is learning about you and the preferences you have as a consumer and as an internet user, and it is storing those and reflecting your interest in the content that it produces for you later. I think Fernando kind of nailed it when describing the echo chamber bubble that we get caught in on these social media sites, where we systematically block the posts that we find offensive. And then Facebook learns what we find offensive and not offensive, and then we'll post accordingly. So if I systematically find Trump posts offensive, it's going to rid my feed of Trump posts. What does this do to me as a consumer? This is actually an interesting question for the kiddos. What happens to a news consumer like us when our feeds are limited and just become reflections of the individual?
Well, it's like a lot of people then, when that happens, it's like we get kind of less access to a lot of the certain media and that, and a lot of like the advertisements and that they can give out. And with that, it's like when our thing becomes opinionated, a lot of people will kind of base, like, they, it's like more of an idea of people will then like disagree with you a lot often. They'll like judge you a lot more often. So, like, when your thing, like, on Facebook, when you block stuff and it limits stuff and then it, like, personalizes to where, like, you get the news and that you want or want to hear, it's, like, people then can really, like, criticize you or really then judge your opinion by that.
Actually, talking about how you brought up my bubble thing again, you know, how you get pushed aside and isolated the more that you're in that bubble, I feel like the only way to pop it correctly and have everybody coexist is like looking at all forms of media, all forms of media from around the world. Kind of like Dan, you do that with music and news that you find around the world. So I just feel like you can't just be in your own bubble. It'd be a whole lot easier if we all somewhat could try and coexist, but there's no kind of doing that because everyone's going to have conflict sooner or later.
So the answer to not falling for fake news is work harder.
Yeah,
and
almost.
Research.
Yeah, work together and kind of not lie to each other.
So suddenly it's starting to make sense to me why so many fall for it in terms of the general person's ability to put the research required in to disprove or prove news that we see. Actually, Nando, you said something interesting. When he's on Twitter, he looks at topics, and also you establish what you want to look up later.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Why don't you just use Twitter as the place where you learn about those topics?
Oh, I don't know, because, like, it's Twitter. You can't, there's no solid information. Like, there's CNN and there's Fox. Like, they have their own kind of, they have their own profiles, but you can't just, like, look at one profile, look at one post and say, hey, that's fact. You have to go out and do your own research. You have to kind of set out apart from what you saw on a post and kind of take your own, you know, I guess grow up and take your own lead and search up facts, because you can't just believe everything you see. You can't be that gullible, you know.
What percentage of teens you think are going through this process, Manny, Sierra?
I don't think they probably take a lot of time into doing more than one, you know, either website or something. They like you were saying, you know, they probably believe the first one they find, especially if it's maybe even a short paragraph or something, you know, small, or just maybe even image, and you're just seeing an image, and they believe it quicker just because it's such a quick way of being informed without having to do all this reading. But like Fernando does, I kind of do the same thing. You know, if I find something that kind of catches me, whether I'm just like, oh, this seems cool, or I'm like in a mystery about it, like saying, I wonder if this is true, it is good to, you know, look for more resources rather than just have one and believe that one.
Yeah, that's what I do a lot. I do a lot. Like, especially if I'm really skeptical about something and I'm not sure and I have a lot of questions, like, do I really think this is real? Then I'll do the research. But I feel like kids who are growing up in our era where internet and media is, like, it's, like, really, it's combined a lot together, especially with news, and it's, like, it's so it delivers a lot of the news faster than that. And so I feel like younger kids, especially kids our age and that, when they see the news, they're just, like, easy to believe right away. They don't actually go and find the research because they didn't grow up in that area where you had the newspapers and that, and you can, like, base your opinion and find more research in that, and where you can actually absorb the information so you're not just skimming through the article like kids in that do our age now.
Yeah, I'm thinking of how famous people kind of take their own role in being able to kind of reflect a movement. You know, if, like, say some African-American actors or just famous individuals that happen to be African-American were supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, it kind of pushes it forward. A lot more people are looking at it now. You know. So where do famous people kind of stand in media, and how do they help convey messages as well?
So you're speaking on, like, famous people. I just thought of kind of merchant, like, you know, merchandisers or people who are trying to sell products. I think that's probably one of the most well-known or, like, you know, type of people who persuade or persuaders, just because, you know, they make these commercials and they might use a well-known actor or an athlete or something to sell the product, and that makes we would make us the consumers. They'd be like, oh, I want to get that now, or, you know, you get the craving, or you want to feel the same as they do, or however the commercial or the advertisement shows you, you know, and then you believe that fantasy or that
idea,
kind of. Yeah, or that life or whatever, and you go out and buy the product. So I think, you know, that's how a way of, you know, famous people are interacting with that. But, you know, it's not like a bad thing. It's not, you know, they're not the people who are being paid for to do those you know, those commercials and stuff. So that's basically what it is, you know, is making money and selling product.
Yeah, and based on the idea, it's like commercials now with the famous people, like, a lot of famous people now, that's kind of, like, a lot where they get their money, especially, like, being in the commercials than advertisements. I feel like that's how a lot of famous people now, like, some people get kind of seen in that more, is because of those advertisements and that. And that's how a lot of, like, famous people get a lot of their money, is from the advertisements and that.
But is that, like, is that kind of taking advantage of us, though? If you think about it, kind of fooling us into thinking something just so we can buy it?
I mean, yeah, it's a big thing. Like, when, I mean, that's a lot of the commercials when they are using the famous people, like, that's, like, one of the main things how they're able to get us to buy stuff, is because we think, oh, well, this person who's well known in that is using it, so why can't I go and buy it? And, like, thinking, well, if they have it and they say it's good, well, then maybe I should believe them, especially if it's a famous person or someone that you know or someone that you like. That will definitely help you, like, boost the way you want to and the feeling you want to get it.
Can you guys talk about a time where you had a friend, acquaintance, totally fall for fake news? Just kind of curious if you've had that experience.
I want to say I've fallen.
Or speak to personal experience.
Yeah, I could say that I've fallen to, like, fake news, like, where I've read something and I think automatically it's true. I mean, it has turned out to be true, but there are times where they've turned out to be wrong, you know? Like, I don't know if it was you that kept bringing up the rock, the dead rock.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, the rock is dead, you know? It's like, oh, what if it's true? Like, I don't know, you know? It's just kind of, like, funny stories like that.
I just saw a thing on Facebook with, and they've done several different people now, but the other day they had a picture of Bill Cosby and said, well, now he's died, so there's no need for the trial. And then that was replaced by somebody else a few days later. And then when I first thought, I thought, well, I should probably look that up. But then I thought it was from U.S. Uncut. I mean, very official sounding news sources, you know, but total lie.
They're very deliberate in their URL creation. They want to make URLs that seem quasi-legitimate. I've seen msnbc.com.co, so it looks like MSNBC in all ways. So a lot of older generations are in fear that the younger generation is just this mass of manipulatable individuals who are just going to fall for the fake news that is thrown at you. Speak to those claims. I think it's an interesting claim, and you three are of this generation. What do you agree with this characterization? Do you disagree?
mean, I agree with it, but I do have my doubts. Like, a lot of our kids, they can get fake news thrown at them, and they don't know really the difference because they don't really know how to determine whether it is fake or real or that. So I feel like a lot of kids our generation is very easy manipulated, but I feel like there is some kids out there and some people who do have the mind set to kind of like analyze it and question themselves and be like, is this really real or that? And so they'll actually go search it up. But yeah, I feel like most of the kids our age and are in our generation is a lot more easily manipulative than the people of our older generations.
I think there's probably, well, manipulation's been probably around for even before this, but especially now, from so much technology and all these things going on and all these different types of music and, you know, just different subgenres or whatever, kids, especially just because they're younger, you know, they don't really know as much. They are being manipulated, if we want to call it like that, but, you know, we still got to see, even outside of that, we all get influenced somehow. But it just, you know, anyone listening, if they're young or, you know, if you're a mentor to someone younger, just tell them, you know, make sure you know and do your research. Don't just assume and do it off one little piece. Don't believe everything you see or read from one little article, you know. Go a little bit outside of that box and try to find, you know, other sources that help you find the answer to yes, this is true, or no, it's fake.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's fair to say that we're like so easily manipulatable, you know, because we have a whole lot more media compared to prior, you know, like we just have media constantly coming out as fast as it can come out. Like as soon as it happens, it'll be likely out on Snapchat or like MSNBC or CNN or Fox or anything, you know, like as soon as, I think it was the British Parliament that got attacked. And as soon as it happened, I saw it on Snapchat. I'm like, wow, it was like recent. Like it said, it had the date and it was the same day. I'm like, wow, this just happened then. You know, it's just crazy how fast it is. And I don't know. I feel like you said, we're manipulatable. I feel because most people now don't want to question the things that we know, because to question the things that we know is to kind of question our own world. And people are kind of scared of that. So they just kind of try and believe what they hear.
Yeah, a lot of people, they don't want to go out of, they're like in their comfort zone. They don't want to go out of that world and question a lot of things because they are afraid. Like, if they question it, what other people might think or how their world might change, or even like how their media and their view on the media and news and that might change. So a lot of people do. They hold in their questions, or they try not to question it at all and believe the first thing they see. So that way they kind of stay in their world and in their comfort zone and what they know more.
I've watched colleagues, older generations, quickly make hasty generalizations about the younger kids, their relationship with technology, tech zombies. Do you think this issue of learning the difference between fake and real news is just as an important mission for older generation as it is for younger?
Yes, I would say, yeah, especially if, you know, these people who are older than us are buying the newer products like iPhones, because I see a lot of people buying iPhones, you know, it's not just the teens who have them, you know. So, you know, they're getting used to, you know, texting and stuff like that, or, you know, using YouTube or some sort of Facebook and stuff. So, you know, they're going to try to not fit in, but, you know, they're going to try to, I forgot the word, but like...
They have to learn the medium, too.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Do you guys mostly check out your social media on a smartphone? Because I was just thinking, like, I did. My daughter gave me her old smartphone, and it doesn't work well. And so I'm always seeing that on a computer screen. And I think if the medium is the message... Seeing all that world in a smartphone, a really small screen, is different than seeing it on a computer. Do you guys look at Facebook on computers? And
Yeah.
I feel like for me, I'm like mostly just because of me not having my own like computer besides the Chromebook that we get for school. It's like a lot of the media I see is on smartphone is like Facebook and that, and a lot of the news I get is I see it on my smartphone, but there are times where I see a lot of it on my Chromebook and on a computer, and yeah, like seeing the whole world from and all the world news from the smaller screen is a lot. It's a lot more overwhelming in a way, and a lot more stressful to like kind of read through in that, because you are on a smaller screen and so much information is being put out at you once, where if you had that computer screen, it's kind of like a little bigger, and so it's like it's a little more open. You can kind of not have to look at all the articles and that and all the news like crammed into this small screen, so you feel like more, you feel less stressed, so you kind of can get into the articles and that more and read more into it.
I don't know, you brought up Medium as the message again, and I just kind of wanted to ask, like, Medium is the message, but what's stronger, the medium or the message?
Well, I think it's saying that they're equivalent. And so as the medium changes, Marshall McLuhan was talking about how things had gone into television, which wasn't brand new at the late 60s, but it was still relatively new. I mean, my parents grew up without any television at all. By their teens, they had radios, but television was a pretty new thing in the 50s, and it really didn't get everywhere until sometime early in the 60s. And I think that there was constraints that happened that it shaped the way we looked at the world by having it on the screen. And what used to be black and white, and then it became color, and I was like, wow, it's in color now. But you know, it's still like this size thing, and it's the pace that it's going at. And the pace of television is really slow compared to the internet. Because the internet, like, you can just scroll. You know, you can change channels real quickly on the television, too, I'm sure. But it's different. And I think you'd linger longer on television than you do on a social media. Does that make sense? Am I?
Yeah.
I get what you mean. But, yeah, media is, I mean, everywhere. You know, you can walk outside and you can find some sort of, even a local newspaper or, you know, there's like propaganda, maybe a poster or something that kind of shares an idea or tries to sell, you know, an idea. But like you were, like Dan was saying, you know, TV is something so quick and it's like rapid, you know, it just keeps going. And you can change the channel, there's still a commercial of a different product being sold, you know. And you stay there because those commercials are playing, you're watching it and you're waiting for your show to come back or, you know. So it's like, you are watching it, and then, you know, that's why they do these things, you know, they put the commercials out so then you can go, oh, while I'm waiting, maybe I should go get this snack that they're showing on TV, or, you know.
Yeah, so I feel like, yeah, with advertisements, that when you are watching TV, they do influence, like, a lot how you, like, kind of, how you feel in that, like, in the commercials and in the TV, like, how many was saying where they might advertise, like, to buy chips, and you're like, oh, I want to go get those bag of chips since I'm, like, hungry and that. And so kind of, like, the advertisements, they kind of influence the way you feel in that during the TV show. And a lot of it, you can't fast forward. I mean, you can fast forward, but if it's, like, live TV or something, you can't. So you kind of, if you really want to get back to your show, you kind of, like, you kind of have to sit through the advertisements. And so you watch them and you get more involved. And you start, like, kind of feeling like you need or you want some of the advertisements that they are, like, giving you and the stuff that they are trying to sell you and that. So it's like, I feel like TV, that's a lot of how advertisements do come around, and how a lot of people, why they put advertisements in the TV is because of that reason, and because of more people gain more influence like that.
Matt's the teaches journalism and English classes at Ukiah High School. And he's part of a pilot program called Checkology. Would you talk about that? That's really interesting to me.
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks for shouting me out there. News Literacy Project, an institution created with the mission in mind to empower students with news literacy, put together an online learning platform called Checkology that basically facilitates students going through an online news feed, differentiating between fake posts, real posts, what sort of strategies we can use to sort of, in a way, analyze these posts for their credibility versus lack of credibility. It's a pretty cool interactive online learning platform that students have been speaking positively about. And when I heard about the product, it seemed like a natural fit in both the journalism and English classroom, especially post 2016. It seems like a super important type of content to be introducing kiddos to. What do you guys think? You've been doing Checkology for a little bit. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It's like interesting to see all the types of ways that they try to put the idea out. You know, because there's a like, you know, they on that the website or the Checkology, you know, they show us different ways, like or just different point of views, like, you know, being biased. Mm. So how to, it shows us how to maybe determine when they're being biased, you know, because they're saying the way they, like Fernando said earlier, the way they approach might, you know, kind of like us kind of scare you away or like just like push you or pressure you to believe it really quick. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the Checkology. It's really, like, it's giving me a lot of insight to a lot of the different news and the different ways they can present the news. And so, yeah, it's really helpful in especially, like, helping me identify, like, what's fake news, what's real news, like, what's propaganda, what's based on opinion and stuff like that. So it's, like, it really helps us, especially, like, in the journalism and especially in the journalism class, how it how we basically focus on our news and we deliver our own news. So it's like really helps us kind of not be biased and kind of helps us with the way of delivering our news and helps us identify what's real news and what's fake news. So we kind of can filter the news that we give out and not just like in the journalism classroom and not just in the newspaper to the UK High, but just to our friend or maybe daily lives and that, and when we are reading the news.
I think you guys kind of covered it, yeah.
Yeah. I want to bring up the idea, too. Earlier we were talking about how, you know, not any news is not, you know, 100% true, but it's pretty easy to, or not always easy, but, you know, what media literacy is, you know, it's just being able to kind of tell. And you can, you know, we can kind of tell whether a story is, you know, totally, you know, fake, and then when something could be believable, you know, because it depends on what the situation is or what happened, you know, in this little article or whatever source you're using to get this information.
Yeah, well, you know, that Bill Cosby thing I was talking about, now that I think about it, the fake article said he committed suicide.
Wow.
And so I kind of went, well, that's somewhat reasonable, you know, considering what he's going to, you know, his trip. And yet, and even though I know it's not true, that image is still in my brain. You know, and that's, to me, that's this, one of the scary things about media, especially when it's using images to get things across. It's like, you know, even after you find out that it's fake news, that stuff is still in your head. It's part of your history. You know, right. It's something you've learned.
The idea is still living.
They're still out. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that just kind of shows how powerful social media can be, you know, and how much power it has over us.
I promised the older folks that you guys would talk about what podcasts are. And I know that, you know, would you please go through this stuff?
Yeah. So podcasts have been around for actually pretty long. You know, it's nothing really new. But they're you know, a little bit more used now just because how easy it is to access this show. And, you know, you could download it pretty quick by usually it's giving you a link to this, to either the website or an app, because there's a lot of apps on smartphones that we have.
Which app do you use?
There's actually the app on the iPhones. I think it's iPodcast or just Podcast. And, you know, you can just search up whatever you're whoever you want to listen to, and there's so many different topics and themes, ideas that go on through there, and anyone could make them. You know, it's really easy.
Okay, so I don't use an app like that. I have another way of getting RSS feeds, which is what they used to be called. Really simple syndication was actually kind of complicated, but it made you feel small because it was really simple. But so there's great shows like KZYX plays a number of shows that are podcasts, like This American Life, Radiolab, Reveal, the Shortwave Report. NPR has lots of podcasts. Mm-hmm. I mean, podcasts are... So on your app, on your smartphone, is it like categories you can go through and then it will automatically download it next time a new issue is or episode is up? It will automatically download it so you can listen to it when you want?
Yeah, there's a lot of easy ways to do it. I mean, there's you can even do just from a computer, you know, you can find the podcast. But yeah, it is by whatever your topic of your choices, you know. And that's what I was going to bring up earlier, you know, the phone. Sometimes even your phones can send you a notification of something that goes on, which is another way of media. You know, it's like they're, you don't even have to look for this certain thing. It just pops up on your phone, and then if you're interested, all you got to do is slide your phone open to that app, you know, and it'll automatically send you there. Whether it's like important news, maybe a couple friends that you know who just posted something, you know, there's a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
So are you choosing which things you get notified about?
Yeah, most of the time you know what you're being notified by, because it's a lot of times it's your friends tagging you in posts or, you know, wanting to do that. But sometimes, like, you know, there's a, or like the, what is it called, Amber Alert, you know, that kind of just pops up, and that's, it gives you some sort of information about what's going on, you know.
Yeah, like a little text and a little information, maybe a link, you know, here and there, a little picture side next to it. If we're talking about podcast, I had the NPR One app on my phone, and that one was pretty cool because it had a live radio and then had a search bar, look for a podcast, look for a show, and you could just go through the episodes, click one, and it's kind of that easy as long as you have Wi-Fi.
So you had to have Wi-Fi, it wouldn't do it off the cellular?
Oh, I mean, no, yeah, that too.
Yeah, okay. But it probably eats up a lot of bandwidth, right?
Yeah, because it's radio, because it's constantly going and on a podcast.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys have produced podcasts. So tell me about your podcast.
You want us to talk about the process of making the podcast or like what we're actually doing? Our ideas?
Both.
Our process actually at high school was pretty... It wasn't too hard, but there was a couple steps we had to take just because we had problems with the microphones and having the right equipment. Mm-hmm. But once we got it, we actually got in there, you know, and did our work. It took us a while to actually get comfortable and working with our voices and being able to, you know, speak without mumbling so much and just do that. But, you know, it's pretty fun. And then I would, anyone who's interested in maybe trying it, you know, go for it and just practice, you know, talk a lot or just keep talking. One of the things that me and Fernando went through a lot through our first podcast is like we knew what we wanted to talk about. You know, we had little ideas, but we were too afraid to just keep talking and then, you know, let the ideas come out more. So like one we're working on right now is government or the relationships between government and religion. So, you know, we weren't doing it in a biased way. We were just speaking on both sides and just seeing how they kind of coexist. So, you know, once we're finished with that, we'll, you know, it'll be up and I'm pretty sure people will like it.
And so how do you end up titling it so people would find it?
So we actually use another app called SoundCloud. It's almost the same thing. It's used for music, but you could also, you know, post a podcast and you title it just as whatever you want, you know. So we thought of our name, The Mix, and so that would be the name of the show. And then we just title it by whatever the idea is. And what our shows usually consist of is looking at two different perspectives, you know, rather than just talking about one thing and then, like, being blunt about it.
Cops and robbers.
I'm the robber and he's the cop.
Of course. Of
course. My podcast, I haven't, like, I'm working on finishing my first episode now. There's a lot of stuff I had to just, like, it took a little while, and there's a lot of stuff, like, with my voice and that, because mine's, like, based on kind of one idea. It's a lot more scripted, and based on a lot, like, of just a single idea, and it's kind of blunt, but I'm trying to, like, trying to find it to do it in a way where the audience is like, they're not so out of it and they don't get so bored because I am so monotone. So I'm like kind of working on trying to get my voice out of way so it like sounds interesting. Because
what's the title of yours?
Unsolved.
Do you want to talk about the first idea you're exploring in your episode one?
Yeah, so my first episode is like, it's based on this case called Santa Rosa Hitchhiker Murder Cases, which I guess people in like Mendocino County that and Sonoma, they should know. It's kind of like, it was kind of like a series of murders with hitchhikers, but it's like the whole series is kind of about kind of unsolved mysteries and kind of mysteries that we have like in our county or in our world, and some things that we don't really know about. And so I kind of like go in and kind of get more detail on it, kind of investigate and kind of see like what that case is about and like what really happened, and that kind of like give people more of an idea of some of the things that, and some of the mysteries that we have that are in the world.
So are you like solving whether the crime happened or not, or you're just finding information and kind of like informing the listeners?
Most of it's like informing, but in a way it's kind of, at the end it's kind of a little bit towards a perspective kind of solving it, but a lot of it towards the end is like kind of producing and letting people wonder like their own thoughts about it, and giving people ideas of like how they might think it happened, or what they, since it is unsolved, so there's not like a specific way it happened, like they don't, like the murder of the case might be like the unsolved part, or the way it happened might be unsolved or stuff like that. So the unsolved parts, it's like at the end it gives, I try to give people like, I raise questions, I try to give people the chance to kind of think about what happened and kind of try to solve it in their own mind.
Okay, you know what? Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, so we're going to need to do our sign-off. And you guys are awesome. And thank you so much, Matt, for coming in and bringing the kids up here and all the stuff you're doing. The Checkology thing sounds amazing, and I hope it inspires other schools to take on the program.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Manny.
Me, Fernando.
And me, Sierra.
We want to thank Matt Lefevre of Ukiah High for assisting in organizing the show.
Yeah, Lambville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jama@laytonville.org.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those on KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Youth Speaks Out is normally aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 5 weeks. That's May 7th at 3 p.m. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in May.